And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Elas Biberai is the director of the Voice of America's Eurasia Division. He was in town last week for a talk at the Voice of America Museum about the 30th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. Biberai watched the Cold War up close as a journalist with the Voice of America. And his work continues today amid challenges and dangers in Russia and Eastern Europe. Elas Biberai joined us last week to talk about that. I'm joined now by Dr. Elas Biberai, is the director of the Eurasia Division for Voice of America. Dr. Biberai, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
And we're also joined by Melinda Zemper. She's a board member and a volunteer at the National Voice of America Museum of Broadcasting. Melinda, thank you for being with us, too.
Thank you as well.
So we've got a lot to talk about what's happening in Eurasia and Dr. Biberai's experience there for the past nearly 40 years as a journalist with Voice of America and its impact on that region. I'm very excited to talk about that. But we're also celebrating the 75th anniversary of the Voice of America and its connection here to our region. So, Melinda, this is something that's been going on for about all year now, the celebration of the 75th anniversary of Bethany Station. Tell us how you're celebrating currently.
Well, right now we're wrapping up the year's events, and we're just trying to raise awareness generally for people to come out to the Voice of America Museum in Westchester.
Has the year been a success in terms of reconnecting that space with the public?
Absolutely. I think we've really grown our attendance this past year just with the strategic partnerships that we've managed to organize with various organizations like the Midpoint Library, as well as other organizations.
And the connection of the Voice of America to this region is unique. Not everybody has the infrastructure or that connection to the history of the system like Westchester, like Cincinnati does. Just for those who may be unfamiliar with it, tell us why it's there.
Basically, it's all because of Powell Crosley Jr. He was the amazing entrepreneur from the 1920s who really is the impetus for the radio communications industry in the nation. And he developed the rhombic antenna technology during World War II at the Bethany Station. And that's the technology that allowed the Voice of America Bethany Station to transmit VOA shortwave radio news to oppressed countries overseas for the last 50 years.
Why was that important? Basically, what is Voice of America?
Well, Voice of America really was founded on the whole concept that if you tell the truth, tell people the truth, they will make the right decision to decide what kind of government they want to live under. And so early on, the Voice of America decided that telling the truth was better than any kind of propaganda because people want to know the truth and people want freedom and they will strive to get freedom.
Dr. Biberai, you are the director of the Eurasia Division for Voice of America. You're actively engaged in broadcasting to this day on behalf of the VOA in that part of the world. We heard Melinda say that the truth is better than propaganda.
I strongly believe that this is the best kept secret. Not many people really know about the Voice of America and what our role is. But let me, before I answer your question, if I may, let me just tell you a little bit who we are today. The Voice of America is part of the U.S. global agency, media agency, and we are the largest U.S. international broadcaster. We're a fully multi-media organization. We provide content on TV, on radio, on the internet, and we broadcast in 47 languages. We are a government-funded media. We're funded by the U.S. Congress. 100% of our budget comes from the Congress. But we have total editorial independence, and this independence is guaranteed by law, by our charter, which was enacted into law in 1976. Congress also has approved other legislation which provides for a firewall. So there is absolutely no place for the government to interfere with the editorial content of what we put out. What really defines us is the trustworthiness, the credibility that we enjoy. People in the war-torn countries, in societies which are deprived of accurate news and information turned to us because they believed in the information that we were providing.
And the information that you are providing, is it information about the United States, or are you covering, as an independent agency, the part of the world that you're in?
We do both, but our mission, our main mission, is to provide accurate information, balanced information about the U.S., about the world, and about the region to which we broadcast. A significant factor, a significant part of our mission is really to tell America's compelling story, to tell our audiences, worldwide audiences, about the U.S., life in America, our institutions, and our democratic values.
Dr. Elliz Biberai is the director of the Eurasia Division for Voice of America. And Dr. Biberai, we were talking before we went on that you started back in 1980, which was in the midst of what we know as the Cold War. And you're in a particularly interesting part of the world as it relates to that era. Tell us about what you've seen from that vantage point as a VOA journalist, where you are.
I consider myself very, very lucky to have worked for so many years for the Voice of America. I believe so much in the mission of the Voice of America. I even tell my closest friends that if I were rich and if it were permissible, I would have paid the Voice of America to keep me employed. I started with the Voice of America soon after my graduate studies. I have a PhD in political science. And it was a very interesting period. This is in the 1980s. And I felt a connection with our audiences. And it was a revolutionary period in Eastern Europe and in the Soviet Union. And we provided very comprehensive coverage of what was going on and some of the movements, beginning with the rise of the labor movement in Poland, Solidarity, Lech Walesa, and then the rise to power of Mikhail Gorbachev in the Soviet Union. He begins to implement these reforms, which eventually then lead to the developments in 89 and the down and the fall of the Berlin Wall.
So you run the Eurasia Division from Washington, D.C.?
That is correct, yes. We have regional divisions at the Voice of America, and one of them is the Eurasia. I am responsible for 8 language services for all our programming, all our broadcasts directed at Russia, Ukraine, Georgia, and Armenia from the former Soviet space, and then the Balkan countries, Albania, Bosnia, Macedonia, and Serbia.
And how is the agency able to gather news from those sites? I understand you don't have a very large staff.
Most of our staff is in Washington, D.C., at our headquarters. And we also have stringers in all our target countries.
And people outside the industry may better understand the term stringer as sort of a freelance contributor.
Freelance correspondence, yes, yes. Now, we have had very serious issues covering Russia right after the dissolution of the Soviet Union during President Yeltsin's leadership in Russia. Russia had an open media. We were able to have radio and television affiliates there. But then back in 2008, we began to see democratic backsliding in Russia. And as a result of the pressure from Putin's government on our affiliate stations there, we lost in 2008. We lost all our radio and television affiliates. And we were then forced to accept, to adopt a digital strategy.
So that's a way around these restrictions.
That's right, yes. And 2 years ago, the government there declared us and Radio Free Europe as foreign agents. So it's been very difficult to operate inside Russia.
What does that mean to be designated as a foreign agent?
It's a law that was passed and signed by President Putin. the objective of that law really is to intimidate all those people who work for us, whatever they might be in the Soviet Union, in Russia or neighboring countries, and also to intimidate our audiences there. The premise there is, how can you have trust in foreign agents, quote unquote?
Well, let's talk.
Now we have the U.S. FARA laws here. As long as, for example, RT is registered here, there's absolutely no interference whatsoever with their
And you're talking about Russia Today.
Russia Today.
And the outlet that does commonly go by RT. Yes. And they are often viewed as propaganda by media commentators in this country. And you're right to note that they are allowed to operate here without much in the form of penalty. Okay, so let's talk about Russia, because we in America have a lot of ideas about what that means, what the country is, who President Putin is. They may be influenced by a variety of sources because we have so much access to information. But Dr. Libera, you are the Eurasia Division Director for VOA, so you have followed Russia and the Soviet Union prior to that for some time. What should we know about that part of the world that we don't know?
Well, just going back to the end of the Cold War for a second, there were so many people had so many hopes that Russia and the other former communist countries would rapidly embrace democracy and market economies. And in fact, for a while, there was significant progress that all these countries made. The political landscape changed. In many of these countries, we had the emergence of independent media. Then with Vladimir Putin coming to power, especially during his second term, he begins to restrict the space for independent media, for political competition. And what we have right now is a Russia that has... It's a fully consolidated authoritarian state. All power is concentrated in the hands of the president. The judiciary and the legislative branches are obedient to the executive. The media is under almost total control, especially television stations.
So under those circumstances that you're describing, though, with the state of Russia currently and the way the power is pretty much centralized in one individual, how are the opinions of America and Americans shaped among the Russian people?
They're shaped by the media there. And this is where we come into play. The Voice of America plays a critical role in countering that dominant Russian government narrative, which portrays the United States in a very bad light, which offers Russia as a model, tries to undermine democratic processes, tries to undermine the democratic values that we cherish at this end. And I believe that we do a pretty good job in providing the type of content that the Russians do not get from their domestic media.
But they have to actively consume content from the
that
VOA.
Is correct.
It's not
like
you don't flip on a radio station, you don't turn on the television. You have to be pretty sneaky, I guess, to be able to get it. Are there any penalties if people are found consuming content from the VOA or alternative media?
No, I don't believe so. But what is very concerning is some of the legislation, some of the laws that they have passed restricting the media situation, their media operations. Just a week ago, at the beginning of this month, a law went into effect which provides for the establishment of an independent or sovereign, quote-unquote, sovereign internet in Russia. And this law gives the authorities the power to really cut off Russians from the international internet.
And what could be the repercussions of that?
Well, we will have to see to what extent the authorities will in fact implement that law. Are they likely to go all the way to the extreme like China does? It remains to be seen. I personally would like to think that the Russians are mature in politically, that they're not likely to willingly accept such restrictions. But time will tell.
Dr. Elizabeth Bibarai is the director of the Eurasia Division for the Voice of America. And Dr. Bibarai, you mentioned before that your agency relies a lot on stringers or contract writers, freelance writers, to produce the content that you distribute. In places like Russia, how are you able to gather that workforce and find those people who can report for you?
It's a challenge, but we used to be able to travel there. We still do, but not as often as before. But right now, since we have been denied the opportunity to have affiliates in Russia, what we did was we partnered with Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and we have a 24/7 TV network current time, which has affiliates all around the borders in neighboring countries of Russia. So people in Russia do have access to our content. Now, working for the Voice of America, working for Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty, it is a challenge for those local correspondents. And from time to time, they're subject to harassment, intimidation.
So when you say harassment and intimidation, what does that look like in a place like Russia?
Different forms, pressure, calling in them for questioning, and then some of them even decide to leave the country.
Out of fear.
Yeah. I think throughout the region, when you have courageous journalists who engage in investigative reporting, especially on such issues as high-level corruption, those journalists face a lot of challenges there. Our reporters in other regions, we've had reporters who were killed in Afghanistan, Pakistan, in some African countries. We had reporters who've been detained for a while, questioned. So it's a pretty difficult environment out there. And we very much appreciate the great work that our stringers, our correspondents in our target areas do for us. Now, we talked a lot about the challenges in Russia and some of the other countries of the region. By the way, the Freedom House, which monitors progress on many of these issues, scores the Eurasia region very low in terms of media freedoms and also in terms of political freedoms. Russia is ranked as a not free country. All the other countries that my division covers are ranked as partly free. None of the countries in that region is ranked as free. So in addition to the challenges that we are seeing in this region right now, we're also seeing challenges in what we thought were countries that had really made so much progress that they had consolidated their democratic order. We're seeing issues, democratic backsliding in countries such as Poland and Hungary, and that is very disappointing.
What does that look like?
Media ownership concentrated in the hands of a few businessmen who have very close ties with the top leaders of those countries.
What are you seeing in terms of the rise of what has been called populist, maybe right-wing populist candidates who have emerged across different parts of the world? Some might even refer to it more extremely as totalitarian. Is that on the rise in Eurasia?
The trend right now in the Eurasia is towards a more authoritarian type of leaders. Ideology, I think, is less important now than it used to be several decades ago. Now it's all about power, about controlling. It's all about oligarchs, people making money at the expense of the entire population out there. Corruption is very pervasive in all these countries. The judiciary is under the influence of those in power, and doesn't really play the role that it should. And lack of the rule of law in all these countries is really undermining progress on the democratic front.
Is there any sign that there's some type of mobilized effort to preserve those fragile democracies?
Yes, both internationally and domestically. The international, for example, the U.S. and our West European allies, going back to the early 1990s, made enormous investments, both politically and economically, in helping these societies make the transition. That assistance continues to this day, but perhaps not at those levels as before. But what is really essential is the progressive democratic forces in those societies, because at the end of the day, the fate of those countries will, to a large extent, be decided by local populations, local movements, local leaders. I personally happen to believe that the younger generations in these countries who are poised to to hold important positions in the very near future will make the difference.
You talked about, Dr. Bibarai, how the VOA is able to tell the truth, report facts in the places where you have correspondents and where you're gathering news. How do you do that? How do you navigate the challenges of a democracy, a democratic state that may be teetering between moving forward with more progress or backsliding, as you've said, about their democracy?
It's very, very simple. We are absolutely committed to provide responsible journalism. And if you stick to your standards and if you make sure that you're covering all angles of a story, you're going to be okay.
And Melinda Zemper, who accompanied you here today, Dr. Bibarai, is still with us, a board member and volunteer at the National Voice of America Museum, a museum of broadcasting. What type of connection are you able to draw for visitors to the museum about the type of work that's still going on behalf of the VOA internationally?
Well, we have a number of exhibits at the museum that talk about Cincinnati's broadcast history, technology, radio technology, but our primary focus is Voice of America and its history and the need for people to consider all facets of truth and to embrace the history of the Voice of America.
Melinda Zemper, the board member and volunteer at the National Voice of America Museum of Broadcasting, we appreciate you being here, and we really appreciate you bringing on Dr. Eliz Bibarai, is the director of the Eurasia Division for Voice of America. It's been a real pleasure talking to you as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.